Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you for attending session 269, titled Out of the Luminous Silence, Connecting with the Divine Feminine Through Women's Rituals. We ask that you please silence your cell phones. I know we've heard this a million times today. We ask that all here today engage thoughtfully and respectfully, understanding that we all come from varying backgrounds and beliefs. Please be respectful in your comments and questions. This session is being recorded. You will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. Take advantage of our symposium special by subscribing to Sunstone Magazine, 7 issues for the price of 6 at the registration desk as well. Consider also purchasing Skullcandy official headphones customized just for Sunstone. Your support goes directly to keeping symposiums and the 40 years of thoughtful dialogue alive and sustainable. Don't forget to check out the bookstore in the ballroom hosted by Benchmark Books. Consider purchasing a book or two to support Mormon studies and scholars. This session is 60 minutes long. We ask that both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. As a courtesy to other presenters and our attendees, we ask that immediately after this session you do clear the room and speak outside so other presentations can begin preparation for the next session. About this session, LDS women are among a growing number who find the male-defined and dominated structures of traditional religions increasingly stifling, leading them to seek a connection with the divine that embraces Heavenly Mother and expresses their own divinity. For millennia, this yearning has been satisfied through women's rituals, which were also a part of the beginnings of the Restoration. Though banished and driven underground by patriarchal religions, they are not lost. Come and learn about this ancient path to connection with the divine, the feminine path to God. Deborah Brown Gordy is a relationship therapist and spiritual development mentor, beginning her career over 30 years ago as a BYU-trained marriage and family therapist.
Thank you. And just to add a little bit to that, because it's relevant to our topic today. Oh, great, the laptop is right here. For 30 years, since my beginning professionally, I deeply believe that the path to the divine feminine is the woman's greatest path of potential for transformation, growth, and ultimate empowerment. So I'm happy to be here. I'm the founder of the Sophia Women's Institute and work with clients worldwide. So thank you for being here. I'm really thrilled to see so many of you. And also, I would just like to mention, this is recorded, I hope it's okay. The girls at the FLDS booth really need our support. So I really would encourage all of us who can to go make a purchase from them that goes toward their family's needs. So I hope that by the end of tomorrow they have sold out. And they really need our support. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to start with 3 stories. Ellie was turning 30 for the 5th time. As her friends stood around the flaming, elaborately decorated birthday cake, Ellie whispered in confidence that she wasn't sure she even wanted a birthday party this year. After all, she was getting too old for such a celebration, and after all, what was there to celebrate? Over the past years, Ellie thought that she had grown too fat and that her time was running out for finding a husband. Her friends sang the birthday song in appreciation for their dear friend. Ellie listened and then spoke aloud her birthday wish. As she blew out the candles, Ellie looked around at her loving friends and savored the first bite of birthday cake and said, "At least there's chocolate." Huh?
Yes!
At least there's chocolate. Okay, story 2. Sarah and her friends sit in a circle with their hands tied in the meadow at the retreat center. One by one, they tell the ways they have been hampered, restrained, confined. Thank you. You got it. Not yet.
Not yet. Sorry, I thought you
No, that's fine. The next slide is great. They tell the ways they've been hampered, restrained, confined, and disempowered in their lives. It takes time for each woman to name her experiences and feelings that were present with her for a very long time. As each woman speaks, the rest silently witness her. When every woman has had the time and space to speak, together they raise their arms in unison, breaking the ties that bound them. Then one by one, each woman names what she is taking back into her life and places that symbolically into her heart and into her womb space. Story 3. Julia and her husband enter the ceiling room in one of the tower ceiling rooms in the Manti Temple. There are just the 2 of them, along with the sealer and witness. Their entire time in Manti has been luminous for Julia. In contrast to some of the dark energy in the town, Julia immediately recognized the presence of Divine Mother in the Manti Temple. Temple workers, including matrons and a member of the temple presidency, affirmed her recognition. This was a day that Julia had hungered for a very long time. So the day that she and her husband climbed the stairs and entered the sealing room for their sealing was a culmination of her experience in Manti and a deep fulfillment of her heart's desire. As they participated in the sealing, she and her husband both experienced the witness of the heavens, the witness of Divine Mother and Holy Father, and the witness and joy of their family lines in the joining of their lives in eternal partnership. All three of these are stories of women experiencing ritual. One of them, a birthday party, a spiritual ritual for release and reclamation, and finally, a religious ordinance. So every woman in here, and the men too.
It's okay, you don't need
that. Every woman in here has at one time or another experienced and participated in ritual. Okay. So, let's talk about some myths and stereotypes. And I'm going to ask for participation, and I want you to think and answer this question, this sentence stem. Rituals are what? First thing that comes to your mind.
Religious.
Sacred.
Religious? Sacred?
Empowering.
Empowering?
Forbidden.
Ah, forbidden.
Create reality.
Create reality. What else?
Repetitive. Ubiquitous.
Repetitive. Ubiquitous. Repetitive.
Strange.
Strange.
Habitual.
Secretive.
Magic.
Habitual. Magic.
Necessary.
Centering. Boring.
Yeah. Oh, I said centering.
I know you said centering. I said boring.
Oh, sensible.
Sensible, okay. How about this? Turn to the next slide. Rituals are, how about pagan?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Weird. Forbidden. Only old hippies. Radical angry feminists. Or pagans. Participate in them. Snake oil. Imposters. Fake. You could get killed for doing them. You could get kicked out of the church for doing them. Anywhere
shallow.
Along the line, say what?
Shallow.
Shallow, okay. Anybody here have those impressions or somehow connected somewhere along the line with the collective consciousness about all of that? Mm-hmm. So the word ritual is a loaded word, isn't it? We have a whole lot of stuff packed onto that word. We're going to start a little bit today by unpacking the word and talking a little bit about what rituals are. And in the context of us, of all of us gathered here at Sunstone, connected and affiliated in some way with the LDS history, with the LDS culture, with the LDS system, what's the difference between rituals and ordinances? Okay, what's an ordinance? First of all, in my classes, there's no wrong answer. Okay, what's an ordinance?
Definition or example?
A definition. In your own words, what's an ordinance?
To me, they're rituals.
They're rituals.
It's a ceremony.
It's a ceremony.
There's a promise attached to an ordinance.
Okay.
And a covenant.
There's a promise, there's a covenant.
An agreement, a contract.
An agreement. Okay. What else? What else is an ordinance?
I would say it's connected with power and priesthood authority.
Okay. That's good. First of all, I'm going to mention, because it's so interesting to me, the larger dictionary definition of an ordinance and its permutations and its echoes in the Mormon definition and use of that word. A dictionary definition is an act of legislation by a municipal authority, an authoritative order, a decree. That's a governmental legal definition of an ordinance. According to LDS.org, Can we get more official than that? According to LDS.org, this is an ordinance, a sacred formal act performed by the authority of the priesthood. A sacred formal act performed by the authority of the priesthood. Okay, now, what is a ritual?
A sacred formal act.
A sacred formal act? So that's kind of similar. Yes?
I would say a ritual is something that you do that brings meaning to your life. Like, you could have a ritual that you do every morning when you wake up. You could write your morning pages. You could, do you know what I mean? You could drink your cup of herb tea. You could
brush your teeth a certain way.
You could pray. You could light some candles and make intentions for the day. You could do whatever you choose. You would create a ritual that would be nourishing for you.
Okay. That's great. Thank you for sharing that. Any other ideas? Yes.
I feel like an ordinance takes more than one person. It takes an ordinator and an ordinee. Mm-hmm. Whereas a ritual can be those
can be solitary. Yeah, so but again, by the definition of LDS.org, you know, a formal act under the authority of the priesthood. That implies you have to have someone outside yourself. Okay?
Wait a minute, do you really? What about soldiers who are at war and they do their own little sacrament all by themselves?
Well, do they have the priesthood?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I was talking about solitary or needing more than one person.
Okay. Well, that's an exception, okay? Yeah. Thank you. I love the way your family talks about things. Anyway. that's a great example and a great illustration. I want to share with you now my favorite definition of ritual. And then we're going to talk about how rituals and ordinances are similar and how they're different. So rituals are symbolic enactments that facilitate change and generally occur in the context of relationship. Isn't that interesting? They occur in the context of relationship. They are symbolic enactments that facilitate change. They provide a form to convey meaning to ourselves through the use of symbolic objects and specific activities or actions. Rituals serve as a bridge to carry purposeful symbolic meaning to the personal or collective unconscious and subconscious mind. When consciously created and participated in, rituals can be transforming, linking the past, present, and future into a continuum that can be observed. Well, that's a whole lot longer definition than the definition for an ordinance. But how are they similar? Yes.
Okay, I live in the Netherlands. I'm a U.S. citizen, but I've been in Europe for 20 years. And I've been dealing with this recently. And I'm not sure that we do ordinances in the way that it's taught within the church anymore. I'm absolutely not sure of that because they are more rituals.
Okay.
And for me, this is also unpacking what the real priesthood really is.
Okay.
And so for me to answer that, I'd have to also define, well, what do I think the real priesthood is?
Okay.
So, no, for me, it's more ritual than anything else at this point.
Okay.
And the ritual is, as other people have said here, things that bring meaning, things that incite growth, insight.
Okay.
But this is a mystery at this point.
Okay. So you're at a point of discovery.
Yeah.
About ritual and ordinance and priesthood and what are they and how do they work and what are we doing and how does this compare to what it was done, how it was done in the original founding eras of the church. Okay, so you're at a point of discovery and exploration.
Right.
There's a comment over here.
Just to answer your question about how are they similar, I think they're both an attempt to connect with the divine.
Okay, thank you. How else are they similar?
They can both be scripted, and that there are certain words that must be spoken.
Sometimes? Okay. Yes.
I think they're real intentional, like, both, they're, you know, an intention is pretty big, like, so, you know, you have an intention to do either one intentionally, you know, it's intentional.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
They can hold incredible meaning, both of those.
Yes.
And hold incredible meaning for the person that's experiencing.
Yes, incredible meaning and significance. Mm-hmm. And both have the potential to be transforming. Okay. So how, yes, one more comment.
I feel, and this is totally just a postulation, but I might, but I think that they might be different in that rituals tend to be mostly egalitarian, whereas an ordinance involves a power structure. Correct me if I'm totally wrong, but.
That's a very interesting observation. It's a very interesting observation, thank you. And certainly I think that's an interesting, insightful observation within the LDS context. Mm-hmm. And our comparison of ordinances as we experience them currently in the LDS Church compared to rituals. Okay? So, how then are they different?
I would say that humans have a hard time escaping rituals in particular. Because if you decide to abandon religion, you can kind of do away with ordinances. But rituals are just so embedded in us as humans, unless you're going to take a completely nihilistic approach to life.
So it's pretty hard to not have some sort of ritual in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, as was commented earlier, a ritual can be something as simple as getting up and the way you begin your day. Okay? Okay, good. All right, how else are they different?
A ritual is something you do of your own free will. And when we look at it from a church structure, an ordinance is something you're told you have to do to achieve something. It's not something you necessarily do of your own free will and choice.
Okay. Thank you. So ordinances, and we're moving forward because I'm aware of our time and because we got started a bit late. Ordinances performed by the authority of the priesthood. Okay. Ordinances are performed by the authority of the priesthood. Rituals can be meaningfully and effectively created and facilitated and experienced by anyone. Rituals facilitate change. Ordinances also can facilitate change. Rituals often occur in the context of relationships, so do ordinances. Rituals can be used for a wide variation of life experiences and needs, whereas in our context we have ordinances for a set, okay? Particularly what was referred to or alluded to earlier, those that we call saving ordinances. Effective rituals strengthen individual autonomy and self-authority. They strengthen finding your voice and speaking your truth, and they are a powerful container for growing in spiritual empowerment and spiritual adulthood. Ordinances too often keep the authority separate and apart, because as was mentioned earlier, you need an outside person to facilitate the ordinance. Out there and disconnected from participants who remain in this recipient mode rather than as fully active co-creative participants, because ordinances are scripted. I've never heard of anybody, for instance, writing their own temple ceilings.
Right.
And there's usually hoops you have to jump through, too.
Of course.
Requirements.
Of course.
That you must meet.
Of course, yes. Yes, thank you. So there's a dependency on outward authority that keeps recipients in a perpetual state, in my observation, of spiritual adolescence. Okay, so let's talk for a minute about rituals in the early era of the church. And I mean by that the early era, meaning the founding era, the era when Joseph Smith was alive up through Nauvoo, beginning in Kirtland through Nauvoo, and then the early pioneer era through roughly the age of Brigham Young and John Taylor, Sue III. I'm just saying that primary song in a long time.
Okay. There's a third.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they participated in these ordinances or rituals. And it was at this time it was very fluid. It was undefined because the structure and the system, the organization of the church was still very fluid. It was still very in a nascent or beginning developmental stage. So women participated in anointing and blessing the sick, washing and anointing and in preparation for childbirth, prayer circles, and then temple rites, including the second anointing. Anything else that women did that you were aware of in those beginning eras? Yes.
So there's a book coming out by Farah Anderson Sneddon. She's researched women's authority in the church and then how it got correlated away. Mm-hmm. And the book is forthcoming. But I went to a lecture where she presented about it, and she said that she uncovered that much of the work in the Salt Lake Temple Monday through Thursday was essentially women's blessing work in the early church. Mm-hmm. So I would add, she said that also blessing, there were ordinances around blessing the, around death that women performed, or blessings maybe. I might be getting it wrong, but something around death that people, the women would do.
Preparing bodies for funerals.
I'm not sure exactly, but I thought that was notable.
That's interesting.
The entrance into the world and the exit from
entrance
the world.
Into the world and the exit out of the world.
And it harkens back to what I've heard Maxine Haynes say before. I hope she comes to this session eventually, about the women in Jesus' life anointing his body, and that she looks at that as an ordinance.
It was an ordinance.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was a powerful spiritual ordinance that Mary Magdalene did. Yes, back here.
I was just gonna. I've heard Farah as well, and she called them confinement rituals, and that was for both birth and death. Yeah.
Okay.
So yes, that was the way she described it. Kind of sounded like what we would, that what other religions would call last rites or something, but just that a final blessing as you're departing.
As you're departing.
And it really is, you know, powerful to think that women welcome you in and help you out. She also mentioned that there was like this high priestess in the temple that had that was in charge of all of those women who gave blessings, and the temple was open. Anyone in the community could come and get those blessings in the temple, and so the women had a large area that was for them to give their blessings.
And Eliza R. Snow at one point was the high priestess. Mm-hmm. For a long time, it was Eliza R. Snow. Yes.
There was a lot of times where apostles or other women would speak in tongues, and a lot of times women were called on to interpret those speeches.
Yes. Those are related. Those are spiritual gifts.
Yeah.
And for reference for our discussion here today, I've kind of separated out different kinds of things from the broader list, the longer, broader list of spiritual gifts. But thank you for mentioning that. I want to share a couple of journal entries with you to share the context from that era. The first one comes from Patty Sessions on March 17, 1847. She matter-of-factly recorded in her journal, "Mary Pierce was buried. I went to the funeral. Brigham Young preached. I then visited the sick. Mr. Sessions and I went and laid hands on Widow Holman's stepdaughter. She was healed." This happened at Winter Quarters. In Cache Valley, Utah, in 1910, Relief Society meeting records records testimonies of healing at least half a dozen women. Sister Netto spoke of her experiences in washing and anointing the sick, and they had been blessed and healed. As the meeting progressed, several other women bore similar testimony. Similar Munch related an experience of blessing a child who had been given up by the doctor, and it got well. These kinds of experiences were not rare. They were very common. They were matter of fact. They were part of the common life experience of women in these early eras of the church. What do you think, what do you sense might have been the impact for them from these common experiences where they participated in these ways with ritual?
A lot of empowerment and self-directed spirituality.
Of course. Yes, thank you. Empowerment, self-directed spirituality. What else?
Confidence,
absolutely.
I'd say closeness to God.
Closeness to God? All these things. Right, thank
Closer
you very much.
Closer to each other. As you bless people, you become stronger connected to them.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Thank you. So it built community in an indefinable, ephemeral, but very real and potent way, didn't it? Back here.
They're active participants in building Zion.
Yes.
I mean, they were a part of developing and growing the church.
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm. One more comment?
This may be a little bold to say, but there are women now who are kind of reaching back, and since now that we have this new information, and I'm among those women, where we are kind of reclaiming those rights that we have as women to this kind of power of God that we're
good.
All, you know, we feel everyone is entitled to that. And I've had experiences where women have laid their hands on me, and I've laid my hands on them, or I've laid my hands on my sick children. And I mean, all of the things that people just said, I've felt those personally, and it has been almost life-saving for me in a way, mm-hmm. in terms of like my spiritual life, mm-hmm. and my connection to the church, actually.
Terrific.
Ironically.
Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. So I want to share a couple of insights that I've gleaned as I've read deeply from multiple resources and primary sources of women's accounts themselves and journals and diaries of women from that era who talk in this matter-of-fact way of having these kinds of experiences. These ritual practices gave them a sense of inclusion, of belonging, and I think of equality and partnership with their spouses. And purpose also with the divine as well as with their husbands. They empowered LDS women to develop their own spiritual power, and they were uniquely part of LDS women's religious life well into the 20th century. And this power and potency was so strong that the women of the founding era were able to maintain their uses of ritual through the ensuing years of growing patriarchal structure and imposition of patriarchal authority. And it was only with their deaths and the deaths of the women they personally directly taught that Mormon women's involvement in these rituals was banned by the institutional hierarchy. I think that's profound. I think that's profound. So let's, with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about Mormon women's rituals today. We've already heard someone mention that she's participated in some of these kinds of things. There are other women throughout the church, throughout the country, and throughout the world who are participating in these kinds of things as well. So we're going to talk now about some ways that we could start or move forward with this idea of Mormon women reclaiming ritual, with the understanding that this is not the priesthood. This is not claiming the priesthood. This is using the innate feminine spiritual power every woman innately has because she's female and she is created in the image of the goddess. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, the first one, three suggestions to start. Intentional life cycle experiences. What might that mean? What are some examples that might include?
Getting your period.
Pardon?
Getting your period.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What else?
Losing your period.
There are some of us in this room that celebrate that. What else?
Yeah, childbirth.
Childbirth?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Partnering,
getting married, partnering. Okay.
Gardening.
Now that's an interesting
connecting
idea.
Connecting with the earth.
Okay. We're going to talk about that in a minute. It's on the list. Okay. Well, I have three suggestions to start, but we have another comment back here.
Oh, nurturing children through milestones. Going to school, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's great. And we're also focusing on women's rituals because it's women's life cycle that has been so overlaid and subsumed by the patriarchal system of Western civilization. You have a comment?
I know we're talking about women's life cycles, but at the same time, just the traditions of the household. So women often preside, dare I say that, over such events such as Christmas celebrations, Easter.
Of course. Mm-hmm. One of the most beautiful rituals I've ever participated in is a Shabbat dinner, where it's the mother who presides and officiates. And it's one of the most beautiful, precious experiences I've ever had. Entering the circle of mothers, so becoming a mother for the first time. Very far different idea than a baby shower. Okay? So entering the circle of mothers. Another idea, baby welcoming and family blessing. Come on in. Okay. A baby welcoming and family blessing, again, a very different idea than a baby shower. And then baptism. There are things that we can do as women to welcome children in our own way, separately from the experience of baptism. So those are three examples, but any life cycle experience in a Mormon woman's life, from birth through death, can be enriched and enhanced and empowered, and the sacredness can be deepened and celebrated through women's rituals. Women's circles. Has anybody here heard of women's circles in general?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I'm thrilled to know a few of you have. These are self-selected gatherings of women who want to explore, express, and develop their experience and understanding of spirituality. They're egalitarian. Leadership is shared and rotated among all participants. They are focused on growth and explore the archetypal and heroic aspects of women's lives. Through rituals, witnessing, and deep honoring of the circle, they're profound containers for connecting with our true selves, the capital S, claiming our innate spiritual power, and recovering our truth and voices from the patriarchal overlay. They're grounded in feminine values and practices of shared leadership, collaboration, cooperation, and foster the development of our undeveloped senses, intuition, and inner knowing. Women's circles provide a container for women to come home to themselves and a powerful way to attune to the divine feminine. They are deceptively simple in observation from the outside, but I can say, as someone who's participated in a women's circle now for 2 years, they're profoundly impactful. They're profoundly impactful. And then the third idea on the list, connecting with the earth through the cycles of the seasons. And there are a lot of ways to do this. There are earth-based ways to do this. You can keep track and attune to the cycle of the moon. That's an easy way to start. The lunar cycles are often still on every calendar, and if they're not, you can get it on Google, and you can put it in your Google calendar. Okay, it's easy. That's a great way to start. How might they benefit us? And how might they benefit us in terms of as a ritual practice, a spiritual practice of ritual, blessing women and helping attune us and connect us to the divine feminine? Kimberly?
For me, it really centers me into that entire cycle of creation, of which women are uniquely qualified to connect to.
Yes, uniquely qualified, and I believe inherently, innately intended to, because we are the vessels of creation, and that's so much bigger than having babies. As sacred and wonderful as that is,
mm-hmm.
The cycle and the process of creation is woman's work. Attuning to the earth, connecting to the earth through the cycles of the season, attunes us to our bodies, to the divine feminine, to the earth, and the creative flow and cycle of the seasons. And they're natural times to tune in and strengthen that connection through ritual. Yes?
I think one of the real benefits would be we're often so separate from the earth because we're in like an air-conditioned mm-hmm. environment and, or mm-hmm. we're in the car. You know, you look outside and you go, oh yeah, it is spring, isn't it? kind of thing. Or, oh, it doesn't matter about the snow because I'm not going out. Do you see what I mean? If we don't have a personal garden, which I don't, then do you know what I mean? Where mm-hmm. it is mm-hmm. the connection with our actual environment, you know, that we're all part of.
Mm-hmm. And there are astronomical cycles through the year that you can assist yourself to tune into, and the equinoxes and the solstices, still on the calendar, they're easy. And along with following the cycles of the moon are an easy way to start this. And I invite you to do that. I invite you to explore how that might affect your life and benefit your life. Yes, over here.
Yeah,
Well, I was just going to say that one of the first things that we're taught in the temple ceremony is that all things were created spiritually before they were created physically on the earth. And so that's very magical to me, the idea that everything on the earth has spirit. Uh-huh. And it can be as simple as not only just, you know, looking at the moon phases or celebrating the moon phases, but just to notice where something is, where the moon is every night for a whole month, to watch it move, to pick a tree in your yard or a bush in your yard, and to go out and every day at the same time and to see where the sun hits it. It's very connecting and very, I don't know, there's like, you become connected to and acquainted with the spirit in the earth in a way that you can't.
Yes.
Any other yes. way. You can't do it any other way.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. There's a minor seasonal event coming up on Tuesday. It's called Lammas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or First Harvest. It's the first of three harvest festivals. And that's an opportunity coming up really soon. There's all kinds of information available out there with simple ideas to connect with the Divine Feminine, connect with the Earth, the spirit and process and experience of creation, and the spiritual creation through connecting with the Earth. So
can
I share
a question?
Sure.
Can we talk about specific ideas? I have two daughters, and I'm really interested in this idea that you brought forward about there are specific things mothers can do around baptisms. I have a 5-year-old, one 3 years away, you know, for us to mark the occasion. And also around, like, menstruation, like when young women mm-hmm. get their cycle, and then also around menopause, like, to celebrate both of those. I don't know what that looks like, any of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to have a conversation, but can we do it afterward?
Okay.
Because I really want to share some kind of concluding thoughts, and we are running up against our time.
We've got 15 minutes. Since we started at 3:45.
Okay, because aren't they going to start the next session?
Not till 4. Yeah, not till 5.
Okay, good. So I'll take Q&A at the end if we have that time, and maybe we can address it then. But I want to share some thoughts and some impressions from going deep into this topic, personally and professionally, for a number of years now, and talk about why this matters, why women's rituals matter now, and why I think we are being called as women, why I think we're being called as women, and specifically Mormon women, to move from conversation to more action. Okay. And I wrote it down, it's a little scripted.
Fine.
It's the way it is.
We like that.
It's a little scripted.
So, the hunger and the need for the Divine Feminine is a spiritual calling and zeitgeist of our age. Yeah. I really feel that. I've felt that for years. And it's been amplified and gotten more potent and more urgent. This hunger and need is all around us, and it's expressed increasingly loudly with attention-getting ways in cultures and events the world over, including many of us might think in our own LDS church. If this really is the time of the restoration of all things, and I believe it is, then this spiritual calling and hunger is in fact a holy, divinely given impulse. It propels us forward toward the accomplishment and realization of her return. It is time for she who was lost first to finally return. And when you think about that for a minute, it is time for she who was lost first to finally return. It is also time for women to regain our identities and sense of ourselves as we are created in our feminine bodies, feelings, and life experiences as expressions of the divine and vessels of divine power. For years, women around the world, including Mormon women, have been feeling and talking about this hunger, Many of us here have been part of this conversation and felt this longing, but I sense we are being invited and urged to take more actions that fulfill this holy impulse that we feel. Bringing the divine feminine out of the luminous silence through women's rituals are potent, proactive, practical, doable steps we as women can powerfully take now to regain her presence and her balancing power in our hearts, our lived experiences of our lives, and the divine, and to return her presence to our marriages and our families. And as we do this, she will ultimately be returned to the world. I believe we are feeling this holy yearning now because we are the ones here to fulfill this very purpose. I want you to feel into that a minute. The power of that and the sacred trust of that. Women's rituals can be a profound catalyst and crucible for her return through these four profound blessings of soul growth transformation that they facilitate. Number one, spiritual empowerment. Through women's rituals, women are supported and empowered in claiming our own experience, speaking our own truth, claiming our voice, learning to listen to and trust our own inner knowing, intuition, and our own self-authority. Claiming our spiritual authority attunes and enlarges our divine feminine spiritual authority. Healing the feminine wound. I could talk for hours on all four of these categories. Healing the wounds to our essential deepest feminine selves from being born female and growing up in a patriarchal culture. This wound is something that we all inherit through our families. It's in the DNA trace, and it's passed on unconsciously by our mothers. It is maintained, supported, and passed on through the deep structures and the collective unconscious of the foundational element of Western and LDS cultures. It's reinforced by the unspoken, unquestioned beliefs, practices, and assumptions that privilege maleness over femaleness. These two things together, and by saying these things, I'm not implying I think this is all it takes. I'm pretty confident it requires a lot more than that. But these are profound, potent ways that we as women can add to what we already know and we already do that will in fact transform us, because that is the power of ritual. Intentionally created, purely given, will transform us. These two things, spiritual empowerment and healing the feminine wound, resulting in spiritual mastery. Claiming our spiritual authority through spiritual empowerment and healing the feminine wound yields spiritual mastery. We move forward from perpetual girlhood, where women have been trapped by patriarchal systems, and grow up spiritually, becoming spiritually self-sufficient with spiritual autonomy. This is essential for growing into goddesshood, and this is essential for growing into equal partnership. Equal partnership with our beloveds, equal partnership in the systems that we're all involved in, including the systems and the institution of the church. Embracing the divine feminine and transforming the world. Healing the feminine wound includes the first involution of the fall and will restore the essential balance and original blueprint of sacred partnership between the masculine and the feminine, and it begins with women. We are the light bearers and spiritual leaders in the pattern of Eve. The first step is to claim our spiritual authority. Restoring the divine feminine to the world will ultimately heal the world and ultimately play a part in bringing in the millennial age. To do this big, grand, glorious, cosmic thing that I think we have been tasked with, that is a part of our spiritual soul agreements, why we are here now, we must first embrace the divine feminine personally. We must first come to feel her presence, receive her guidance, to know her, and then to presence her in the world. Women's rituals attune us to this frequency of the divine feminine that we have been cut off from through modern culture, through disconnection from the earth, through technology, through the masculine model of education, and the masculine model, path, and definition of success that we have all learned and followed so exceptionally well. Embracing the divine feminine is an embodied experience. Women's rituals attune us to our deeper core feminine self and connect us to our bodies and the earth. We discover two things. We discover that not only is the divine feminine here, now, out there, all around us in the world, and she is, we just also discover something equally, and for many of us, more precious. We discover the divine feminine is in us. And that will change your life. Women's ritual is a powerful vehicle for disembodied experience. So as we embrace the divine feminine in ourselves and discover, connect, and attune with her in the physical world, our marriages will change. We'll be catalysts for true partnership in our marriages that is lasting and real because it is born from spiritual transformation from the inside out. Our cultures and our institutions will transform into more genuine partnerships because they too are being reborn from the inside out. And I believe this is a far gentler, easier, more effective, and I think ultimately quicker and more lasting path to institutional cultural transformation. We are being invited as Mormon women to join the circle. We are needed, we are wanted, we are loved, and the women of the world are waiting for us. As a beloved mentor of mine once said to me, you can wait till your dying day for someone to give you permission, or you can decide to listen to your inner knowing and heart's desire and go claim your birthright. We don't need permission. Our power to claim our birthright of embracing the divine feminine is available to us all right here, right now, through women's rituals. So I hope that we all will do so with joy and gladness and thanksgiving. And I say to you, as has been said to me, thou art goddess. Thank you. And if you're interested to learn more and want some resources, go to my website, and there is a beginning guide there for you. A free loving gift to help you on your path.
Do we
have
3 minutes for questions? Okay. Here, about 7 minutes.
Okay, we do have time for a few questions. Yeah, so we're here.
More a comment. One of the things that I've discovered recently that's been profoundly beautiful to me is there's a Benedictine nun named Sister Joan Chittister who has a YouTube video called The Divine Feminine. It's about an hour long. I strongly recommend you listen to that. It's the Divine Feminine is very scriptural. And she walks through a whole bunch of scriptures that were eye-opening to me. They're in the Bible, and I'm like, I have no idea.
Well, they're not in our Bible.
Chittister.
They're not in our Bible.
Sophia is there,
but the scriptures...
There's quite a bit in our Bible.
There's some in our Bible, but a lot of it has been removed.
Oh, yeah.
But it's in the Roman Catholic Bible. So you need to get a copy of the Roman Catholic Bible to really get the experience of how the echo and the shadow of the Divine Feminine of Sophia is in the Bible. There's a question back here.
I love the idea of the Divine Feminine. I always have. My mom was a very strong woman, and you know, we kind of grew up all of us feminists, you know, like eight kids. I haven't been LDS for 20 years. I can't imagine that your message is getting through to a lot of the men in the church.
Doesn't matter.
Just gets through.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't have to.
It's not the man's job. And I don't mean that with any disrespect. There's no stark intended.
It's all right.
It's our calling. It's our work. It's our work. And
do you feel progress?
I do. Look at the people that are here. Good night. I thought I'd have my daughter and my friend and my other friend and the moderator. You know? Look at the people that are here. Yes, there's progress in people. And the institution will be impacted by the soul growth of the people. The institution will be transformed by the soul growth of the people, and it starts with us, and we are fully empowered right now. We have everything we need right now. Right now. Yes.
I just wanted to piggyback on that beautiful comment you just made, that it took me a long time to realize that patriarchy hurts men too. Men and boys.
It does.
The imbalance, you know, of the feminine and masculine, that men and boys are only allowed to inhabit a masculine identity, you know, like they're not, you know, they're not allowed to feel their emotions, and that's, I mean, it destroys them, you know. I mean, the men who aren't allowed to, and the little boys who are told you're not allowed to feel your feelings, I mean, it dehumanizes them, and it makes them unable to connect with other people. It's extremely lonely, I think, emotionally. Like, most men don't have a lot of friends because that hasn't been, you know, privileged to them, and so we're kind of privileged in that way.
And guess what that does? That creates a masculine mode.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That we haven't even really begun to acknowledge yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it. I see it in the man that I love the most,
mm-hmm.
who was raised that way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I see it in my grandsons, the sons of his daughter. So, the healing that we are called to provide and facilitate will transform the world. It will transform marriages. It will empower and free men to be all of who they have the potential to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with us. Yes.
Could you just give us two examples of rituals? Because you've talked a lot about rituals. But some of us don't really have, we don't understand your particular concept. Could you just give us an example of two different rituals?
I will give you an example of a baptism ritual that we plan to do with my soon-to-be 8-year-old granddaughter. This is very much within an LDS frame, and it's simple and it's short. We plan to, my daughter and my other daughter and myself and my soon-to-be 8-year-old granddaughter, we're going to dedicate a day soon to her. We are going to go to dinner with her. We are going to take her to a special place where she wants to go. It's going to be all about Naya. And celebrating her, we are going to read a couple of stories about choosing God. Because my other daughter is no longer practicing LDS, has not been for many years, but she's Jewish. And so we're going to talk about choosing God and what that means as a female to choose God. And then we're going to give her, each of us, a special gift that symbolizes that and signifies that to her and helps her over these next 3 months while she is leading up to baptism. Yes.
I just wanted to respond to your question over there. It's my daughter that's getting baptized in a couple of months. And I have a friend, you may have read her story, she posted on the Exponent website about her experience with giving her daughter a women's blessing after mm-hmm. her baptism
mm-hmm.
confirmation.
Mm.
And I'm trying to figure out if I'm brave enough to do that in my ward, and if I would have people participate with me. But I think that's a beautiful example of a mm-hmm. way that we can participate in a feminine way that does not, there's no power of the priesthood involved in this,
mm-hmm.
but it's the power of what we can give to our children, mm-hmm. daughters and sons, in a ritual way.
And we may do that. We may do that.
You could do it at home, too.
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
not
yeah,
yeah.
Right.
No, but we may do that as part that's of our beautiful. Ritual. Well, I may do that as a grandmother. So that's
thing.
Another example. Yes, two more questions. I don't know how much time we have left.
2 minutes.
Okay.
Another example, too. I remember reading recently Joanna Brooks in a very beautiful essay talking about a ritual that she did with her daughter, you know, introducing her to womanhood, you know, menses, and the special ritual that she performed with her in terms of taking her son's place special for dinner and talking about all the positive things of being a woman. And you know, I was moved to tears reading that. It was really beautiful.
That
wish I had done that with my own daughter.
That is a very beautiful way to celebrate a woman's crossing over that threshold. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was just going to suggest giving and or not giving, but having whoever is the person being celebrated, whether it's a young girl or a crone who's stopped menstruating, have that person choose a new name.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has nothing mm-hmm. to do with
the temple.
You know, the temple. Like the new name that's given mm-hmm. in the temple. in part because it's just, you know, it's not imposed, it's you, the person chooses it. But that's really powerful, because if you think about it, our identity is built around our names, at least in our, you know, in most cultures, I guess. And we don't choose them, at least in the West. And to allow a 12-year-old or 11-year-old or whatever to choose a name for themselves, it's not one that obviously is going to be legal, but that's a really spiritual, it can be a very spiritual experience. And then as a crone, and that's what usually called...
when you cross over through menopause.
Yeah.
Such a negative crone.
A croning could involve also choosing... my croning involved choosing a new name and... a magical name for me, it was, and just activities like that, and declaring, this is why I've chosen this name, and yeah, I have some ideas too, if you're interested.
Thank you all so much.